Service budget reform, and we will adjourn the committee.
April Fools.
We will reconvene the committee. Today is April 1st. We will continue with our informational meeting format with invited testimony. Before we get to that, any announcements from staff?
Yes, Chair, just one. At your place, the dais is a formal, as a hard copy of that Mercer report that you received, the executive.
Yeah, just a couple days ago.
Right, the executive summary. This is just a fancier version. We didn't have enough for the public, but it is online in full draft for anybody who would want the full version.
Okay. Very good. Again, continuing the informational meeting format, I'd like to call up two folks from One Quality Health Alliance and Intercommunity Health Network, Pam Maria. I have short-term memory issues. And Kelly Kaiser. Well, when you enter and sign in, then we'll get it straight. I met you yesterday. I asked you 5 minutes ago. And I'm still not doing well on this.
I would say it was early onset, but it might be late for that.
Touche. Good one. Enter and sign in, please. And make sure you talk. Get real friendly with those microphones.
My name is Kelly Kaiser, and I am a vice president with Samaritan Health Services and the CEO of Intercommunity Health Network.
And I'm Pam Maria from the Tualatin Health Alliance. I'm the director of that PHO. And we're going to speak to the committee today about the role of the physician hospital community organizations as it relates to the health plan. So Kelly's going to start.
Great. That will be most helpful for us.
Okay, we're going to start today and talk a little bit about Samaritan Health Services. It consists of five hospitals and approximately 150 employed physicians. We have hospitals in Lynn, Benton, and Lincoln County. We have three Type B hospitals and two DRG hospitals that are part of our system. We have a service area of about 250,000 in our three counties that we serve, and Samaritan Health Services is the sole owner of Intercommunity Health Network. I did want to point out that IHN only administers OHP in Lynn and Benton counties, not in Lincoln County, although we do have hospitals and physicians that are part of our system in Lincoln County. IHN was created in 1993 for the sole purpose of administering the Oregon Health Plan. That's the only line of business that we do. We went live February 1st, 1994 with the inception of the Oregon Health Plan and currently serve 16,000 lives in Lynn and Benton County. We are interested in working with Lincoln County in terms of the OHP population over there and have explored different options in that area and have not expanded in that service area at this time. The overall goal of becoming our own community-based health plan was to try and keep the management of the care and the coordination at a local level and have our hospitals and physicians with aligned incentives be involved in the process together to provide good care. You can see what our mission statement is. I won't go through the whole thing with you, but really our goal is to be the management tool between the providers, the hospitals, and the client to make sure that the best care is provided in our communities, and that's our mission. And Pam is going to talk a little bit about Tualatin Health Alliance.
Okay, Tualatin Health Alliance is a physician hospital community organization that was created in 1994. We have Tualatin Community Hospital and 175, give or take a couple, participating physicians. The ratio there is about 50 primary care physicians, 125 specialists. We provide care in Western Washington County, pretty much limited to that service area. We have over 16,000 managed care lives, of which only about 4,000 are actually Oregon Health Plan members. we can't count our PPO members, but we have contracts with the PPO plans as well. The ownership of the Health Alliance, we're technically owned, if you can use that term, by Tualatin Community Hospital. And by that, I mean they put up the restricted reserve to start the fully capitated health plan. They pay our salaries, basically, and provide all of the equipment. The governance, however, is different. We have a board, a Tualatin Health Alliance board, that governs THA, and that board is made up of an equal number of physicians, hospital, and community members. Under that board, there are committees and groups. There's four committees and five physician groups, and all of those groups are chaired by the physicians, and the work that they do then, of course, has to go up for final approval at the board level. I just want to mention again, there are community members that sit on that board, and those community members also participate on the committees. We have 13 different contracts, including the Medicaid contract, Medicare contract, HMO, and PPO contract, so we're a little bit different in that respect. Our mission statement's a little shorter. I have the mission statement envy. To facilitate quality, cost-effective health care to the community. That's the most that we could put down in words.
Thanks. Could you say that again? I didn't quite get that. No, I'm serious. I mean, you were laughing. I was laughing.
Okay. To facilitate quality, cost-effective care to the community. That's
like
what
that.
We're there to do.
Probably a long weekend of work there, you know?
Yeah, it was. Right. Hours.
I'm into those things. It's like crazy.
That's right. We got it down to that. Okay. We wanted to talk. One of the questions that was asked to us is, why are our hospitals involved? So Kelly and I wanted to address that. Part of the reason is in our communities, it's really part of the mission for the nonprofits to provide care for all folks in the community, and we see that as part of our mission to participate. We want to help with managing the inappropriate ER services, and we do serve a bit of a safety net role in our communities. Obviously, the care of first and last resort for a lot of folks, so the hospitals have a vested interest in trying to manage those dollars. We want consistent referral patterns for the docs. It makes it a lot easier for them if they don't have to particularly worry about which health plan covers the patient, but they can use the same panel of physicians in the same hospital no matter what. And quite frankly, we would like to keep the management control local, and the hospital has a vested interest in doing that as well. What's different about the PHCO, again, not to stress it too much, but we are a very strong community-based organization, and for PHO to work, I think that's what we've both found, is that you really need to have a community that defines itself. The hospitals do supply the, what I'll call loosely, the deep pocket for risk in our organizations, which means if we don't have enough to cover, given reinsurance and the amount of money we've put aside, the hospital does take the risk beyond any withhold. The concern is, as time goes by, of course, the margins are getting smaller, and we just, on the hospital side, will not continue to have any of those deep pockets. The other thing that's different about a PHCO is that it's not their core business function to run a fully capitated health plan, so it makes it a little bit different than some of the other organizations that is their core business. So we do compete for resources in that environment. And it's a change of mindset for the hospital side, not that this hasn't gone on for years with managed care, but with us being right there and part of the system, it's different. And there is a focus shift from more is better to what I'll just say necessary is best. And the hospital and the physicians are equally, hopefully, invested in doing that. And the good news about that is that translates over into all of the health plans. The benefits, everyone is at the same table when we're negotiating contracts, when we're making decisions in utilization management, when we're dealing with issues in our patient care quality improvement, everybody's at the same table. It seems to work well, not that we don't act like a dysfunctional family sometimes, but it definitely does seem to work well. Both our organizations have been in business since the inception, and we're still there with no intention of leaving. In fact, when the commercial insurance providers, Providence, Regents, and ODS pulled out in our market, we kept those patients and just took over full risk on those patients. We had been managing them before.
Pam, I'm sure you said this, but what's your geographic market area?
It's Western Washington County. We're probably the smallest plan. We just have that area in which our primary care base and our hospitals are located.
How far east do you go? I mean, Tualatin is in Hillsboro, so do you...
Hillsboro? We go into Beaverton, probably, you could...
Through Alloa, up to Beaverton.
Through Alloa, 185th, sometimes as far over as 170th. We have some crossover zip code areas right there on the edge in the 06 zip code area.
And then do you go the county line on the other end?
Pretty much.
Gales Creek.
Yes, and we'll take, you know, patients, Forest Grove, as long as the patients are using our primary care providers and live in our zip code area. We'll certainly see them. Okay? The last thing I guess I want to say is that the physicians have the opportunity through our organizations to hear directly from the community members, and that has proven to be a very important component of the organization. With that, Kelly's going to talk about some of the administrative services that both our organizations provide.
We do a lot of this is probably similar to what you've heard from other fully capitated health plans. We do utilization management. We do the inpatient concurrent review. That we may get a little bit better because we're all part of the same hospital system, and we can immediately have good communication about at least who's in our local hospitals. And those inpatient case managers also follow our patients who end up at out-area hospitals, so we have good lines of communication there. Quality assurance and quality improvement initiatives. Again, we follow all the quality assurance and improvement initiatives that are part of our contract with the state, but we also coordinate those with community-based quality improvement initiatives as well as hospital-based quality initiatives and try and have a consistent message so that regardless of a patient's insurance type, their quality measure is the same in our system and make sure that happens. We provide the exceptional needs care coordination as all the other health plans do, complex care coordination, really working on a community approach to disease management and areas of expertise that we need, that our plan has identified or our service area as things that are important, such as maternity case management, smoking cessation, and those types of services. And then, of course, we do contract with many other hospitals and physicians and other ancillary types of providers to provide services to our members. Certainly, there's many services that are not available within our system. We also do a lot of the same information as other fully caps, member services, contract management. We do claims administration. I know for our shop in Samaritan Health, we process claims for the 16,000 members on OHP. We also self-insure 5,000 employees and dependents within our system, and we also pay claims on about 30,000 other TPA-type lives. So we have a relatively large claim shop that does manage that process for us and is right next door and works very closely. Because of our largeness of our system, we do have low overhead. I don't have a separate payroll department or an IS department. We use those of the system, and that allows us to keep administrative costs down. And we have aligned incentives between hospitals and physicians. For us, we have about 150 primary care employed physicians and continue to have all of them at the table at their on our board as well as our quality management committees to help make the decision between the hospitals and the physicians. Here's a little bit of the demographics for IHN in Lynn, Benton, and Lincoln counties. In Benton County, there's about 4,275 enrollees. The majority of those are in IHN. There's about 150 or so that are primary care case management. There are almost 1,000 people on fee-for-service. In Lynn County, we have about 12,000 lives that are on managed care and 2,500 on fee-for-service. In Lincoln County, again, I put Lincoln County on here because it's part of Samaritan Health's service area, although IHN does not participate in that county at this time. There is 6,200 fee-for-service and about 1,000 primary care case management people. And as Pam mentioned, in Washington County, there's a variety of fully capitated health plans, and you can see the numbers there, and Tuolumne has about 4,000 of those.
Why is the fee-for-service number so large in Washington County?
Mr. Chairperson, Representative Cruz, we've asked that question ourselves, and I think we heard some testimony yesterday that there's a percentage of those patients who just can't be put in the fully capitated health plans. But as Ruby and Jeff testified yesterday, we have some mandatory zip codes in that area. In fact, I think all of our zips are mandatory right now, and we're still not seeing our numbers go up. We've been looking into that issue, and I think the not-so-short answer is we're not sure. We've made field visits, and we're working with the outreach people to try to increase those numbers and get our enrollment up. We're open and have encouraged enrollment, as have Family Care and Care Oregon, and not seeing a lot of movement.
I mean, I find that to be, because when we talk the plans about can you manage fee for service population, and it's absolutely no problem, and so we still have this many outliers, and it's just kind of, it's counterintuitive to a degree.
I would concur with that, and I think some of the concerns in the field offices when we've been out and talking to them is there's still some confusion out there. I think there's still pretty short staffed in some cases. I think there's some delays with enrollments. Some of those things certainly factor into this. Some of it is just not understanding the system still.
Yeah, that's 50%.
That's 50%. Yeah, that's my thought. That's 50%.
I mean, is the glitch in the state part of the system?
I wish I had the expertise to say exactly where that is. I can only tell you that from our investigations, when my staff's been out in the field offices talking with the enrollment folks, we get a variety of different reasons why that happens, and it's everything from we don't believe managed care is going to stay around to, you know, we're short-staffed as it is. We're trying hard, but we're just not able to get everybody in. There's a lot of confusion when patients are enrolled in the managed care plan sometimes. That process can use some improvement.
Okay.
Mr. Bukovian.
Thank you, Chair. I think it was perhaps last, end of last session, there was a budget note in Ways and Means about kind of directing DHS to increase managed care enrollment. I guess in that time frame, have you noticed any activities? Has there been a drop or spike at all in activity in terms of getting folks to enroll?
I can say not what we would have hoped or expected, no. And no.
We're the only plan in our service area and have seen not a lot of increase either. Our percentage is much lower fee-for-service, though.
Yeah. Well, there's fewer enrolled than are in fee-for-service. I mean,
yeah. It's, 51-49, 52-48,
yeah. Rest states 70-30 and moving to 90-10.
Well, I can understand Lincoln County to a degree, but
yeah, this is just Washington County.
I know.
This is Washington County, right?
Well, those rural areas.
In Lincoln County, there is no managed care.
Right.
So that's why it's
well,
there.
We can understand that. Yeah. But what's this?
Is this the part where you were telling me it's Jan Buffa's fault? Is that?
It's Madam X's fault.
Yeah, Madam X. Is there anyone from OMAP watching right now? Or Mr. Chair, could I ask you a few questions?
Of course.
First, I want to challenge you to think about something. We've been told there are certain types of patients that you just can't get into managed care. These are patients who heavily utilize health care. Dialysis patients, maybe patients who are immune deficient or who are or have come out of transplants. My first thought on those is that's the ones that need to be in to be managed. And why we have them outside and assume they have to be outside, I'm not quite certain of. If you have proper capitation rights or some way of dealing with that, I would think you'd be able to take care of those patients more efficiently than just having them out there in fee-for-service. And that's the ones we'd want in, as long as you're being properly reimbursed for keeping those costs down and offering better care. Do you have any comment on that?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Bates, I would say that we would agree, and I think the issue historically has been the capitation rates, and they don't necessarily reflect that type of acuity. And so certainly we in the community-based plans absolutely want to manage. There are neighbors and our members of our community, and they're going to come to our hospitals and our physicians no matter what they have coverage or not. So we have found that our model has been successful in getting them the care they need. But the adequacy of the capitation rates for such high acute issues like that have never really been addressed in the contract. And I think if they were addressed, I certainly can't speak for all the plans, but I would assume that if that was adequate, the plan to be willing to take that on.
Follow-up question, Mr. Chair. Do you think you could do that in a more efficient way than having them out in fee-for-service?
Well, I would say that we have always been supportive of managed care and feel that the managed care environment does provide some stability that this population needs and that it works well for this population. So in our experience, that has been the case.
And I would add, Mr. Chair and Representative Bates, that our physicians, we've had circumstances where they're actually disappointed when they find out that the patient has an ESRD diagnosis and has to move out of quality health care because they lose our case management services. which for patients like this are very valuable to them. So there are certainly issues around that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe staff can make sure we keep that on the table for discussion. I never accepted that argument that these people should be out of fee-for-service. I mean, into fee-for-service, not of managed care. It seemed counterintuitive to me as far as efficient care is concerned. And I think you just substantiated that for me. You understand where we're going with this? Okay. A couple more questions real quickly.
Of course.
Mr. Chair, the Good Samaritan Health Plan, is that the same plants in Lebanon and Corvallis and that area?
Samaritan Health Services is Good Samaritan Regional Medical Center in Corvallis, Lebanon Community Hospital in Lebanon, Albany General Hospital in Albany, Pacific Communities Hospital in Newport, and North Lincoln Hospital in North Lincoln.
I would like to have you carry a message back to Dr. Rick Wolpat for me.
He'll be here on Thursday, I believe.
He better be.
Okay.
He
is IHN's medical director, and I will share that.
I have two other issues I want to talk. I want you to bring forward to see if my perception of your plan is correct. This plan is one that was tried in various parts of the United States and various parts of the state itself and failed for lots of reasons, most of which I think was a lack of cooperation between physicians and hospitals. You have managed to maintain a hospital-physician partnership through some very difficult times. There are some natural things that may be helpful to us. I'd like to have a little more information on it. First off, with the hospital and physicians on board together, the friction between the hospital and the physicians or the plan and the hospitals seems to have gone away. You're not going to be getting, your hospital's not going to send a message to the plan, this is the rate for next year, and I won't take your patients if you send them here. So that problem probably goes away for you. I'd like to have more comment on that. Secondly, I know at least one of your plan has what we call a blended rate. The physician gets paid a blended RVU that's an average of the Medicare, the Medicaid, the commercial, and the indigent. And so there's no reason for a physician to cherry-pick a population. They take all comers in a fashion. I'd like to have a comment on both of those, if you could, if those are still going on.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Bates, I think we do have the majority of our primary care providers are part of our system, and we do contract with the independent providers in our community as well. But the bulk of our primary care providers are within the system, and on our board of Intercommunity Health Network also has its own board of directors with three community representatives, system representatives, and physician representatives, and we balance those out. And we do sit down and discuss the rates that will be reimbursed for the next year at that table as a group, and we don't have that animosity that you would expect because we are part of the same system. So that is true that we don't have that, and I think that is the key to our success and why we've been around for 10 years now working on this. But it's still a challenge because healthcare in general is under a lot of pressure right now in terms of the financial situations that are involved in that, and you do still get some of those pieces of the physicians and the hospitals and the health plan all trying to be involved in the same business. And as Pam mentioned, being a health plan is not our core business as a health system, and so it is a bit of a different piece when you're a payer versus a provider and having to balance that out. But we do work on making that a balance in the system.
Mr. Chairperson and Representative Bates, I would add to that in our market, you're right in the first place, PHOs aren't supposed to exist. And whenever I meet somebody and say I'm from a PHO or a PHCO, they say, well, no, you can't be. They don't exist anymore. So it's, you know, I try to, yeah, really, there's another one. But they aren't supposed to exist for that reason. I would say in our market, we're a little different than Kelly's market in that most of our physicians are independent physicians, and the cost pressures are a little different on them than they are in Kelly's environment, and they're not employed. So when we get down to that blended RVU piece that you're talking about, payer mix becomes very important to these docs who are independent. And we manage that through increasing the number of contracts we hold through THA, and in part that helps keep our physicians invested in our Medicaid and Medicare products, but in particular in our Medicaid product. We have policies that indicate to the docs that if you want to be participating at the better commercial rates through our organization, you will continue to be accepting of and open to our Oregon Health Plan members as well. And in a sense, that's sort of blending their conversion factor, if you will. It's more complicated than that. There are formulas involved, but it's the physician committees that sit at the table and come to agreement on how many members they'll be making sure everybody takes, equitable distribution of membership, and a lot of that does, quite frankly, have to do with the Medicaid reimbursement rates being so much lower than commercial rates. So we blend it in that way. That answered your question.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'd just like to announce that the real coffee has arrived. The other stuff has been tested for rat poisoning, and we don't think, you know, we don't have any conclusive tests back yet, but...
Because I'm still... Not purposely April Fool's, really, but not. The girls taste this, they said it tastes fine, so better.
Thanks, Art.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to thank you for warning me about the coffee.
Kelly, question.
Yeah.
Help me out here. You guys are sitting up here espousing the virtues of managed care. We understand all that, that it's a different type of organization. But you guys own a hospital in Lincoln County?
Actually, we have management contracts with the two hospitals in Lincoln County. And that just happened in the last 2 years.
And yet, okay, we have obviously no managed care. And help me with that.
Well, Mr. Chair, we have been working with the providers in Lincoln County. We've made a variety of presentations starting in 1997 about taking our managed care product, as other managed care products have not been successful in that community. We recently looked at this again. The utilization in that community and the per member per month cost is so extraordinarily high under the fee-for-service population in that community that given the financial situation in the market of where we are, we did not feel we could go into that market at this time right now and could afford the time that it would take to bring down those costs and get our management in place and get our managed care and utilization review and all of that up and running quickly enough before it may bury us. So we are still working on that, but it's financially it's very daunting.
What are the unique characteristics of Lincoln County that make it cost prohibitive?
There's not a lot of managed care in general there, so those practices are not as common as they are, say, in the Mid-Valley where we are, where managed care has been around for a long time. It's pretty much strictly, and I'm not an expert on that county, but it's pretty much strictly a fee-for-service environment in all types of insurance. And so implementing a managed care structure starting with Medicaid would probably be a more challenging path to take than if there were already some more managed care infrastructure in place there and you add the Medicaid to it. And that's been our assessment.
That was a much more understandable answer than I've ever gotten out of Fred. Excuse me, Jeff. Hetherington.
Because you were listening.
We're slapping everybody around today. Except our two scintillating witnesses.
Mr. Chair, would you like me to finish?
Go ahead.
Okay. I think that finally what we'd like to say is that the fully caps are already delivering services in this manner that would be an ASO-type approach, which is what we've been discussing here, or you've been discussing here over this time frame. We do have the administrative capacity in place. We have the infrastructure in place to expand that in a timely fashion, should we need to do that. We do have the budget predictability in terms of the capitation right now. In terms of what that would look like in an ASO, we wouldn't know until we get further down the road. We are very supportive of there being consistency in how a service is provided. It's very important, and as you'll hear from the medical directors, but particularly our medical director, Dr. Rick Wopat, has been very supportive that regardless of insurance type, the service that any member receives in our community needs to be the same, and the approach and the process needs to be consistent, and I'm certain that all the fully caps agree with that. And so by streamlining the process and using the systems in place, it seems to make the most sense, especially in the Medicaid population where people come on and then they go off and go on to a commercial insurance and then they come back on, but they don't change doctors and they don't change communities. So whatever we can do to make that a consistent process for the patient as well as the providers, that's our job to try and help make that more consistent, and we're supportive of that. And our physician hospital community organization plan model feels it allows us to have the physicians in the hospitals at the same table merely because of our model and helps us align those incentives.
Thank you. So how do we get managed care in Lincoln County?
Yeah, I mean, that's
in Washington.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, and you know, a little bit in Washington County, a little bit more. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I kind of have a sense there's two different problems here, but both of which we need to answer in this committee sooner or later. Lincoln County may have a special problem as a rural county in that it has probably a high Medicaid, Medicare population with reimbursement being somewhat questionable because you haven't got enough commercial product to balance it out. Having said that, doesn't mean we can't do it because there are some South Coast people that are in managed mm-hmm. care. So I'd like to hear from you. Do you think you could make
let me interrupt for just a second. But for fee-for-service, which most of these patients, they're getting a lower reimbursement rate.
My point.
Okay, I mean, Medicare is staying the same. We're not going to...
We're going to actually get more money out of Medicare on a risk model also. So, I mean, that's another reason for this to work better there. If the question is, has it not happened because of lack of infrastructure and just not being able to get the job done? Are there things there that are a barrier that you can't get around? What's your thoughts on that? The other question is Washington County. Washington County seems to be more of a problem of administrative problems. Mm-hmm. There's no one here from OMAP to answer that, but the question is there then, could the plans take over some of that work of getting people into the plans? There's a natural conflict because you're recruiting people you'll get more money for, so I'm not sure that's a job you should be doing. And having said that, can you think of a better way to be administratively more efficient and quicker to get those people in? Two different counties, two different questions.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Bates, I'll start with Lincoln County. I think our interest in Lincoln County historically was that it was a bordering county, and we have many residents that come from Lincoln County who have been in Benton counties, mostly Benton counties, for services already. Recently, and I say recently in the last 2 years, has our hospital had the relationship with the hospitals over there, and so our interest has become more involved as we've been managing those hospitals in the last couple of years and need to continue to look at that. And as we, I guess I would say it's probably a mixture of both, of there being barriers in the community because of the lack of infrastructure and the lack of a more balanced payer mix to share that responsibility. And then I would also say that for us, the challenge has been sort of that fear of that how long it would take us to get our managed care infrastructure in place and built up to really be able to manage as we manage in Linn and Benton counties. And could we sustain our bottom line basically while we did that? And as we are now working more with the hospitals and more involved in working with the physicians over there, we're getting a better understanding of how that works. And certainly that is something that we would are constantly considering as a system, whether that would make the most sense.
Well, I would assume that the hospital in Lincoln County is probably an A or a B hospital?
Correct. Both are B.
So they both are being compensated this time at cost?
Correct.
The Medicaid program?
Correct.
Does that tip the scales in your favor?
Does it tip it in our favor for managed care? Well, certainly our managed care rates are not as good as those, and so it probably would tip us to look at the whole picture, and we do look at the whole picture in terms of the physicians and the hospitals to try and see if the balance would be there, and we don't feel that we could do that at this time.
Mr. Chairperson and Representative Bates, on the issue of, we're back to Washington County and talking about the enrollment there, the only thing I could say is I don't think the fully capitated health plans want to get into the enrollment business. I think we've talked about that and decided for some of the reasons you cited that's problematic. I do think OMAP resources and the other offices are stretched very thinly. That's the impression we get, and I think somewhat reality. We do find hardworking, well-meaning people in the field offices. I wonder sometimes if they could focus more on that if they wouldn't have better outcomes. Sometimes I think it's an issue of being spread too thin and not being able to pay enough attention to any one area. And we certainly understand how that happens, but I wonder if they could focus more on that than some of the other things that they're focusing on, if that wouldn't be helpful.
Follow up? Hold on just a second, Mitch. Go ahead.
What are the things that they focusing on?
Well, I think the program itself is pretty huge. There's a lot of different aspects of the program that we touch with OMAP, and certainly with the offices that actually do the enrollment. They try to coordinate with those offices and do the trainings, and I think it's getting better to some extent over time, if you can believe that. But I think the focus on trying to run the plan as large as it is, there just can't be as much focus on that enrollment and eligibility process as there might otherwise be. And I say that as a somewhat, certainly from an outside perspective, looking in just from our experience interfacing with them.
Hold on a second, Mitch. Let me keep going down this trail. We're not trying to beat Kelly up here. Tillamook County just sticks in my mind. It's actually worse in Washington, where you've got, you know, some fee-for-service. But we'll get to you in a minute. Lincoln County. But what do they call it when, help me out here, when a physician is associated or affiliated with a hospital? Is that privileges?
Oh, you would have medical staff privileges if you were on staff at the hospital to admit patients. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I mean, where I'm driving, is it in the physician's best interest, since they're both full-cost reimbursed hospitals, that there not be managed care in Lincoln County?
Is it in the physician's best interest?
Yeah.
I would, you know, the physicians are being reimbursed at a lower rate on the fee-for-service reimbursement than a managed care plan. So probably not so much in the physician's interest. They would, I would assume, would prefer to have managed care. But I am not as involved in that county, and I don't know the specifics about the physician organizations. We have a few that are employed with our organization. Most of them are independent there, though. It's not, the PHO model is mostly in the Lynn Benton County hospitals as opposed to the Lincoln hospitals.
Okay. Representative Greenlund.
Yes, I'd like to follow up a bit and get your help with the questions Representative Bates was posing, and I think Representative Westland as well. And it's this issue of what does managed care really mean? And from your perspective, I mean, I've, you know, 30 years in Kaiser, I have a sense of managed care in a prepaid group practice where you can really have a fighting chance of managing care. Now, fully capitated health plans are managing dollars, and there's some kind of sense that when you link with IPA physicians or with other groups of physicians, you somehow need to change physician behavior. I mean, and God knows, after watching Representative Bates, we know how hard that is. But somewhere along the line, if all you're doing is offering a physician a slightly less amount per service than they would get in another model, they're not going to be very much interested. You know, you get dollars doing things one way for a service, and you do $0.9 doing it some other way. The real secret is to end up getting $1.2, but using less services. And it's to change the behavioral patterns as a way of managing care. Sometimes you want to manage it to get better outcomes, you know, making sure beta blockers are always given after heart attacks, or sometimes you want to stop unnecessary use of laboratory services. But it somehow relates, if you're managing care, to affecting the way physicians behave, and affecting it in a way that both improves medical care and returns at least more dollars per service to the physicians themselves. And I wonder how, to what extent in the different plans you have in different counties, you've been able to manage care as opposed to manage reimbursement or something else. And to what extent do you do it in a way that makes a physician interested in saying, yeah, I want to, that looks good, I want to join up, and that helps me practice medicine the way I want to do, rather than stops me from practicing medicine the way I want to do.
Mr. Chair and Representative Greenlick, I think for us what it does is what we try to do is not necessarily, in some situations, try and change the behavior of the physician, but most commonly what we try and do is create the process so that it works for the physicians in our community. And I think that's the key, and that's not specific to our plans, that's all the community-based plans, is that instead of having somebody from Portland or Washington telling us this is how you do things, we have all the committees are staffed by physicians and run by physicians, and they make the decisions and create how it goes as a community, which allows them to buy into it better and feel more comfortable with it and do it. And then should the benefit be there, then the benefit is there to share. And I think philosophically, our group, the way we've always approached it, is that being a small, basically rural communities, we are going to see these people no matter what. And if, at least if they can flow through the process in a way that I've bought into as a physician and the way that I've set up
designed, yeah.
and designed, then that seems to be a better way, at least my impression from our physicians, to manage the care than to manage it piecemealing it together. And so that has certainly the financial benefit is always the goal that you want to get to, but I think in the environment that we're in, the goal is to minimize sort of the hassle and try and provide the best care you can consistently in a way that works for each community.
And do you find differences, if I may follow up a bit, do you find differences among the counties, this is what we were talking about, in the physician's willingness for one reason or another, maybe it's supply, maybe it's whether they're in small groups to begin with and have more use of this. I mean, is that one of the factors that differentiates the extent to which County A versus County B is in managed care?
Yes.
Could you give examples without naming the counties and how that actually works out?
Well, we could talk about Dr. Bates County. Yeah.
Well, any county he's in has got to be a special place because of his great resources.
It's a special place, all right. Failure. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair and Representative Glenick, I guess I would say that it really has to do with the historical patterns and the way care has been provided in different communities and the different providers in the community and whether they're willing to make that change or adjust or be part of the process or not. And certainly we have some providers that are less willing to do that, are more frustrated, and we continue to try and work with them to try and do what we can to make it less challenging to deal with not necessarily just a Medicaid member, but a managed care member, as there's more paperwork and administrative burden involved. And we do what we can to take that burden off them so they can just provide care. But I would say it's across the board in terms of the variety and the different reasons why it works for some and doesn't for other.
And so you're doing a great job talking to the microphone.
Oh.
Mr. Chair, may
you
I
were clever enough to go get some ORS.
They have a little help from their friends.
To augment that, maybe you're going to say the same thing. But yeah, I think experience in a given geographic area is pretty important, too. You know, what is the track record? Where managed care outfits in there? Were they able to make it? If yes, fine, they kept going. If not, no, they pulled in. Once burned, twice, you know, scared, that kind of thing.
I mean, it is a historical thing. When you look at places like Clackamas County that in the early 30s came up with the idea that all the residents of this county were our patients and therefore were willing to get involved in what wasn't even known as managed care in those days, but was. I mean, it really put the world a long way away, and there are just some counties. And I was thinking maybe Lincoln County to a certain extent with the Newburgh Hospital, whatever you call it, hospital district, maybe had worked more to create a kind of identity among the physician groups to be more socially oriented. And I mean socially in the sense of working together, not social, being more socialistic.
What was that? 1930?
In Clackamas County was in the 1930s along...
Oh, 19, not 18.
No, in 1830s, the physicians were still bleeding patients.
Leeches.
And there weren't too many physicians in Clackamas County in 1830. One, maybe. When did McLaughlin get there?
Not that time.
Yeah, one. He could deal with that.
I think Pam had something to say on this.
Mr. Chair and Representative Greenlick, I want to just add one point that I think is really important in these different counties. As I mentioned, in Western Washington County, we have a lot of independent physicians, and I stress independent.
With a capital I.
Yes. And yet we've been able to do this, and at the risk of sounding like a commercial, it takes a lot of leadership. And it takes leadership from some strong community-minded physicians. That's essential. And you have to have, I think it's fair to say, leadership from the top, the CEO level and top administrators in a hospital setting, if you're talking about a PHO, that have a lot of vision and value physicians. You have to have that dynamic to be able to move into the kinds of organizations where you can get beyond just managing the dollars to actually starting to talk about how in the heck are we going to manage these patients who are showing up in the ER or staying, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 days longer than they need to because we don't have the resources in the community to move them out. It's not that anybody wants to keep patients longer than they need to be there. It really truly is an issue of what are we going to do with them. So those are the kinds of things in our organizations that we really focus on, working with the community to find solutions to those things. And it is not easy. It takes a lot of continued effort, and it takes a lot of commitment from the top down as well as the bottom up.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Chair. This kind of is a springboard off of Representative-based question as well. And maybe nothing you can answer now, but be curious to know what kind of incentives, what kind of policy barriers we have in Oregon now that maybe are disincentives or barriers to increasing managed care. What type of incentives are out there that would be more incentives to just, you know, areas like Lincoln County and such to actually pursue, even in the commercial realm, managed care, maybe again longer range plans to get into OHP. And it might be good to hear at some point just kind of collect ideas on the broader picture of what we need to do to incentivize increasing it.
The English translation of that is what can we do to help you bring, you know, fee for service into managed care?
Fear subtitles.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, specific to Lincoln County, if the failure of SureCare poisoned the well.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Cruz, I think that certainly as a managed care plan, if you see that a different plan has been unsuccessful in an area, it does make you a bit nervous as to what happened and how to what didn't work and what did work and could we do it differently. And so it does add to that question of how can you be successful and what went wrong, what didn't work and what could work differently. And so it does add to the question.
Okay, and I have my opinions about what really went wrong there, but we won't get there right now.
Two factors.
I love to hear.
I'll tell you later when we're off mic.
Okay. Well, we had a similar problem in Jackson County when we lost our managed care program, too. It's a combination of history. We had a couple unusual things happen. The biggest clinic in town of 50 doctors went bankrupt at the same time for other reasons. And it set a chill through the medical community about risk models. They saw physicians losing their incomes. Some of them lost some of their property.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really destructive time in the Medford area for that. And now people are very fearful of risk models down there.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Bates, I would say in Lincoln County that the fear of risk in the provider community is very large. And part of our model is risk sharing. And so it does definitely create a barrier.
Well, that Mr. Chair, that was part of what happened to SureCare in Lincoln County was risk assumptions they had made that the state wouldn't accept. And so they went into default automatically. So
experience in Jackson County to a great degree was similar to that 3 or 4 years ago. Jeff can speak to it also. There were some questions about the capitation rates for medications at that time. It put the organization running it in jeopardy. They were losing money, had to pull out, and that really did, as you said, poison the well to this day.
Mr. Chairman, I would add that many of our contracts were risk, and now we're down to just the Oregon Health Plan as our only full risk contract. We're definitely backing away from risk as fast as we can go as a group, with the exception of this plan.
Who's assuming the risk?
In our old Medicaid product, actually the hospital system has the ultimate deep pocket risk. We, of course, have reinsurance.
On your commercial side, it's
the health plans. No, no, no. We're a PHO, so if the hospital assumes risk, the physicians would assume it as well. Otherwise, we wouldn't take the contract. It's always equal. So, no, we're just simply not able to take it. We will take some withholds, but much smaller amounts than we used to. And it's not going to happen anytime soon again, I think, in the physician-hospital community that, with the exception of this, we're going to see full risk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You have no Medicare risk program, Medicare Choice?
We do not have a Medicare Choice product. No, we contract with Providence and Regents and do a small amount of withhold kinds or surplus risk sharing with them, but we do not have a Medicare Plus Choice product. I think Central Oregon is the only group that has that, certainly in our state.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, I'm just a clod kicker from Culver, Oregon, so I got to ask this question.
Well, you're from Tumwa now, so.
Let's talk about my residency for a while.
But I'll talk about mine.
Yeah, that's what I said. Okay, you're backing away from risk. Understand that. Are you so inclined? You've probably read our report, or at least Jan or someone's told you about it. I mean, we're making assumptions in there that, quote, the plans are going to, absorb a great deal of this $17,000, Pam, into their managed care organizations. I mean, is that a problem for you guys? Does that not work? I mean, just tell us.
Okay, Mr. Chairperson, since you asked the question, no, we couldn't take 17,000 members, but we're just Western Washington County, and Jeff and those guys would have to certainly take a portion of that.
About 16.
We're not chasing. We are not out looking for more risk. That's not what we're doing. What we're saying is for these members that live in our community who are in fee-for-service, we believe it would be more cost-effective, better for everybody if they were in managed care. Therefore, we will certainly bring them into the Health Alliance in order to accomplish that. They're coming into our docs. They're coming into our hospital. It's better for everybody if we're managing them. In those zip code areas that are ours. Just recognize that as we increase our numbers, we have to increase our net worth ratios, at some point our restricted reserves potentially. There's financial impact for us to continue to take more patients on. And we just have to, at the business side of our organizations, have to make sure that we're meeting our ratios and financially sound. So that's not to say we're not willing to take on more membership, but there are obviously going to, on a full risk side, there has to be limits to that. We're too small. We don't have that kind of financial backing.
Mr. Chair, they'd only have to take about 3,500.
You gave the number.
Well, a quarter of it, based on the managed care population. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Considering you're not in a geographically isolated area and you compete with other hospitals, I think you're actually facing a situation where profits may be billing in your area. How do you maintain that risk model if a hospital moves in next door that says we're not taking Medicaid patients or we're taking a lower number of Medicaid patients? How do you keep your population managed when they can go to other hospitals outside your system?
Mr. Chairperson, Representative Bates, of course we do face that dilemma. And the reason and the way we manage that is our physician network. There are times we need to have services provided at the other Portland hospitals, and we have contracts with those hospitals, the ones that will contract with us and the ones that don't. We do pay Medicaid rates. We have good working relationships with most of the systems, and there are times when patients do have to go out. But Legacy is a good example of a system that's worked well with us to take those patients for care that we can't provide, and they do it in good collaborative effort with us to approximate OMAP rates to be able to do that for us. If another hospital system moved into either my area or into Kelly's area, my area might be more a hot topic right now, sure, that would challenge the community basis that we're talking about. I would say that anything like that would be years away, and we would evolve to face that challenge. A lot of it comes down to which physicians are on staff where and what are the referral patterns for those patients and can we continue to manage them. So I think we could do that.
Did you get an answer to your question? Can you absorb 3,500?
Yes.
Yes.
We could absorb 3,500. It would stretch us, but we could do it.
I was hoping they could do all 17,000, but that's okay.
Well, Jeff can.
All right, now let's start to negotiate.
Having said that, we would have to talk with OMAP and change some of those ratios.
Oh, absolutely.
I have to recognize that.
That's a given.
Yes.
I noticed you wrote down Mr. Berkovian's lengthy question and gave, you know, me the abbreviated shorthand, you know, notes, and that's fine. I mean, you can think about that. Is there anything that we can do to help you? I mean,
can I follow up a little bit? I mean, that 3,500. You said you don't take risks, so the question is, who's going to accept the risk on those 3,500?
They don't want to take risk, but
is that? I mean, you're talking about taking those as a fully capitated.
Yes, I was talking about fully capitated.
Yeah.
Yes. I think we could manage more patients than that. It's the risk that's the issue.
They're not going out of their way to find it, but given the circumstances.
Although I will say that right now we are open and we have mandatory ZIP enrollment, so we are trying to, capture those patients. We've just had that struggle with them not coming.
We're from the government. We're here to help.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chair, one last question, if I could. Since you have about a 50% non-enrollment managed care, are you seeing those people in your emergency room in your hospital a lot? I mean, where are they going for care? Or are they just doing open card going to physicians?
Yes, we're seeing them in our emergency department. No question about that. We don't even have a lot of urgent care in our community because it's pretty expensive for us to run that as well. So, yes, we're seeing them in the emergency department. I don't want to go as far as to say the majority of our physicians are even willingly accepting our primary care fee-for-service patients right now because, of course, they're so busy. They're working hard as it is. Our specialists are seeing all comers still. So patients who can't get access are showing up in the ER.
So you're having trouble enrolling people because they just don't want it and they don't ask for it until they have a critical need and show up at the ER, and that's the only way you're enrolling people, basically.
Well, Mr. Chairperson, Representative Cruz, right now it's supposed to be mandatory zip code enrollment in our areas as well as Care Oregon and Family Care. Wow. So to try to prevent that adverse selection that you're speaking about.
Right. However.
Convenient for people.
Yeah. If they don't want to play.
And the hospitals.
And
no waiting in the ER.
I thought I just heard something I wanted to ask a question about. Did you say it's mandatory in your zip codes that these people you signed up for managed care?
The population that can be.
What does that mean? It can be. We're in can be
organized. Those limitations.
You're on the one side.
Those limitations that we've talked about. I want to say that the Portland area plans, Care Oregon, Family Care, and THA particularly, and Providence to some extent, although they're only taking patients who are seeing their employed physicians right now, we all came to an agreement that we would, for a period of time, have all of our zip code areas be mandatory. And under that plan, the idea was to make sure we captured as many fee-for-service patients and got them in. And this all happened about the time standard was happening, and we really wanted to just get as many patients under the umbrella as we could, as our plans could take. So that was about 2 months ago we put that in place.
But still, I mean, that's just, I mean, this isn't an outreach effort, is it? I mean, it's just when they present, you sign them up. You know, which gets us back to the same basic problem.
Mr. Chair, I don't understand what's going on here. The patient comes in and talks to a social worker or a caseworker probably and says, the caseworker says, you're eligible for the Oregon Health Plan. The caseworker then says something and looks at the zip code and says it's mandatory that you be in a managed care plan and should sign them up for the managed care plan. But for what we're seeing here, that doesn't happen.
Well,
what does happen?
Representative Bates, the workers have the ability, as we understand it, to override the system. So, yeah. Oh, okay. And I think Kelly makes a good point that we're probably outside of our level of expertise here. And we know what we know what we're told.
Kelly needs to be sitting on this side. I mean, you know,
Mr. Chair, I hope the governor is listening in right now.
Yeah.
Well, no, Kelly's right. We don't want to. I certainly don't want to misrepresent. I'm simply relaying what when we've gone out in the field offices and talked to folks. Remember, too, a good number of the patients enroll by mail. And how does that happen? I don't know what the issue is or how that occurs. So it would be good for probably the committee to get those answers right from OMEP. And there are some people at OMEP who are very concerned, I know, about this, that perhaps we could give you a name of someone to talk to that could clarify this process for you better than we could.
Field trip.
We understand the frustration, I guess.
You guys have been extraordinarily helpful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now, again, I mean, what can we do to help you? I mean,
other than money.
Well, well, Mr. Chair, I guess I would say from a community plan's perspective and a hospital's perspective, we have been very supportive of the Oregon Health Plan and feel that it has served a great benefit to our community, and we are very supportive of it continuing. And are doing what we can to foster that and to try and maintain the infrastructure that's in place, because I think it's proven that is a very effective way to deliver care to this population. And so we're going to continue to work on that and be supportive of that.
We're going to do that. I mean, we will maintain the infrastructure. It's a question of, you know, how many people are eligible. But, I mean, we're going to build it so it's expandable, all that kind of stuff. Anything specific, you know, legislation that we can pass that doesn't have to go through Ways and Means? I mean, structural, systemic stuff?
We will definitely get back to you.
Thank you. That's what I was going to say. Mr. Chairperson, I was going to say that we will definitely take it back to our group. I mean, we could sit here and say, yeah, there's these, you know, 10 things, but I think it would be a better answer if we took it back and had a chance to sit down and write out some specific objectives. I would say from our perspective, we appreciate your interest in the issue, and we do feel valued in the process, and that's been tremendously helpful to us, to our hospitals, to our physicians, to know that you're sensitive to the fact that we're out there and we're really trying to make this work, and we're not even here saying we want more money right now. That'll come. But we appreciate the fact that you're sensitive to what we're trying to do.
Well, I think, and I know I speak for the entire committee, I mean, what's emerging here, what's evolving, I think, is a renewed sense of commitment, you know, between the state and the plans. And we see you guys as the backbone of what's going on. And, I mean, you're a critical component. So, I mean, we're very serious when we say, what can we do to help you? I mean, obviously, money's in extraordinarily short supply. So what are systemic things with inside the system, you know, that we can do to make your job easier and you know, more effective managers.
And keep you alive.
Yeah, and keep you afloat. Keep, I mean, allow you to make
we
a
don't
market.
Lose you.
Keep your nose
we'll
above
lose.
Water, and yeah. That's where we're going. So
that's all we really need.
I don't know, Mr. Chair. I, you know, being a good Republican, I don't know if I like being called sensitive, but.
All three of us.
Wouldn't you think?
Mr. Chair, I retract that sensitive comment.
Hey, well, I'm a Republican, and I'll go for the sensitive part. So.
Yeah, you're a
dirt sensitive Republican.
I don't think I can stand anymore. Can we go ahead and get out of here?
It's over. Any last questions? Anything for the good of the order?
No.
Thank you very much
Thank
for being here.
Much.
Thank you.
We are adjourned.